The Lifestyle Show, presented by Selena McKenzie.
Now, what really makes the British royal family tick? It's a question that royal watchers have pondered on for as long as there have been a royal family. Well, apparently, according to our first guest today, the answer is the servants. Here's to tell us about his latest book, Yes, Mom, The Secret Life of Royal Servants. Welcome back to the show, Tom Quinn.
Thank you. Yeah, nice to be here again.
I've just checked, and this is the ninth time I personally have interviewed you, Tom.
I keep churning out the books.
You certainly do, and they're obviously very interesting because people are buying them and we keep having you on. Now, as far as servants are concerned, my first thought when I looked at your book was, how does a royal family find a servant? Is there a royal family servant agency that they go to?
No, in most cases, it's through word of mouth, it's through family connections. One of the amazing things I found when I was researching the book is how many people work as staff or servants for the royal family whose parents, grandparents, in some cases, families have worked for the royal family going back to the 17th century. And so I think it's usually through family connections.
Does that mean they have to be nobility?
No, that's the other interesting. The royal family, the people who work for the royal family, there's a sort of a real divide between what you might call the ordinary people, who the maids, the footmen, the gardeners, the gillies, and the kind of senior staff. Well, they call them the senior staff. The people like the equerries and the advisors. They tend to be aristocrats. In fact, most of them. They have exactly the same background. It's usually Eton, you know, the expensive school, followed by Sandhurst, or Eton, followed by Oxford or Cambridge. Very, very few of the equerries and the senior advisors could be described as ordinary. And interestingly, in fact, it was only 3 years ago that the first woman equerry was appointed. And I think shortly before that, the first equerry ever in 1,000 years who'd been to a comprehensive school, a state school,
wow,
was appointed. But that's exceptional. Generally speaking, there is this huge split.
So what would the job of an equerry be?
Well, originally, an equerry was the man who, it's from, you know, from equus, meaning horse. They looked after the horses.
Yeah.
But like so many jobs that were taken by the aristocracy over the centuries, the actual business of doing the day-to-day work was sort of removed to people further down the scale. And so the equerries, they're almost like they're the equivalent to ladies-in-waiting for a queen or a princess. They're just paid companions. Some of them these days are not paid, but traditionally they were paid very large amounts. So, you know, for example, a lady-in-waiting in the late 19th century for accompanying Queen Victoria for 6 weeks was paid £500, which may not sound much, but at that time, a maid working 7 days a week, 12-hour days, would earn £50 for a whole year. So
wow,
you can see the difference. But anyway, equerries now, they are just advisors. They no longer look after the horses.
So the people that are doing, we mentioned the word with the word basic, you know, you've got the cleaners, you've got the footmen, etc. Would they be on a good wage?
No, I mean, the average, I only have the figure for 10 years ago. 10 years ago, the average salary for people working for the royal family was a little over £30,000.
Oh.
And when you think that the more senior people will be paid a great deal, it does suggest that the people at the bottom, they do get paid more than the minimum wage, but it's not a lot more. But they do get health care. I mean, unbelievably, if someone came back from 200 years ago, a servant or a maid, they'd be astonished, because now the royal family provides a gym for them and, you know, lots of other sort of benefits, because they, you know, these days they have to. In fact, very rarely are they called servants. They're normally called staff now.
And I assume they all live at the palace, do they?
Many of them do. I mean, there are dozens and dozens of bedrooms for example, at Buckingham Palace. Kensington Palace is a bit more cramped, but yeah, many of them do. And actually, with that in mind, one of the most extraordinary things I think that I've found is the fact that even staff who are, you know, I'm trying to avoid saying at the bottom, but they're not the aristocracy.
Yes.
Some of them not only live in the palaces permanently, but they can spend their whole lives in royal service. I mean, the most famous one, and I only just missed interviewing her because I started my interviews with servants in the late 1980s. And Margaret MacDonald, who was known as Bobo MacDonald,
yes,
she died in 90. The famous, yeah, exactly.
The nanny.
She started working for Elizabeth, the late Queen, and her sister Margaret when they were born. And Bobo spent the rest of her life as really the closest friend that Elizabeth had. Elizabeth could not bear to be parted from her for a day. But the downside of that, of course, was that, like many royal servants, Bobo had really no life outside. She never married, didn't have children. But her reward, when she was older and frail at the end of the 1980s, Elizabeth created a suite of rooms for her at Buckingham Palace, where she'd lived all her life anyway. But she now had a suite of rooms, and she had no duties at all. She except, of course, having jam sandwiches with the Queen in the afternoon. So many of the staff, they not only live with, you know, in Sandringham or Buckingham Palace or Kensington Palace, but they spend their lives there.
Yeah. And it sounds like, you know, there was longevity with Bobo MacDonald because, like you say, she was Elizabeth and Margaret's nanny and probably her closest friend. Would the royals today treat their quote-unquote servants as nicely?
I think the strange thing is that Bobo MacDonald wouldn't have been treated by today's standards as nicely when she started work, because Margaret and Elizabeth's parents, they were very old-fashioned. You know, they saw servants as, you know, to be people who should be used the what they used to call the back stairs, the servant stairs. But I think as Elizabeth grew older, apart from the fact that, you know, Bobo MacDonald was really effectively her mother because she did all the childcare. The late Queen's mother and father, in the tradition of the royal, they didn't actually do any of the childcare. You know, they didn't do the feeding, the changing, the playing. It wasn't the tradition. So Bobo and other servants of the time, they only became close friends if they were in the sort of job as Bobo was, where you would be close to the royals. I mean, if you were a footman or a gardener or gillie, you would have been treated very much as an inferior. But today, generally, the servants are treated very well. I mean, someone gave me a great example where William and Harry, when they have staff to do things, they don't say, get me my horse's saddle or, you know, where's my coat? They say to the servants, would you mind getting my coat?
Oh, well, so I think that's right.
I think it's right too. It shows that they're treating these people as human beings, which I'm afraid, with the exception of Bobo MacDonald, wasn't always the case in the past.
Yes, yeah. I would imagine as well, emotionally, if Elizabeth or Margaret wanted to talk to somebody, you know, about something that was troubling them, I can't imagine our late Queen Mother being very accessible, let's put it. I mean, I remember watching The Crown and the King even had to, our now King, Charles, had to even make an appointment to speak to his own mother because of who she was.
Well, that's absolutely right. And, you know, you put your finger on one of the central problems that Meghan had. She apparently, one of her staff said to me that Meghan could never understand why Charles was so formal with his mother. You know, it was as if they weren't really mother and son. And I don't think that was Elizabeth's fault, and it wasn't Charles at all. It was simply that Charles was probably the last generation of royals who was brought up in the way that I said, where paid staff were the ones who bonded with the small royal children. And so Charles really only saw his mother for half an hour a day. She didn't change his clothes. She didn't feed him. She didn't do any of that. So I think that, you know, that was a big problem for royals. And so, you know, Elizabeth, if she wanted to talk to someone, She certainly couldn't talk to Margaret because Margaret was, you know, always a bit sort of unhappy because she was a spare like Harry.
Yes.
So I think in many ways, where, you know, from people I've spoken to, the person that that Elizabeth went to when there were problems was either Bobo MacDonald or another person I interviewed many years ago at the end of the 1980s, the Queen's head gamekeeper at Windsor. Now, he was a very interesting character because he told me that when he said he wanted to retire from royal service, the Queen said, look, you don't need to do any work anymore. You can retire, but I don't want you to leave the estate. So I'm going to build a house for you. So she had a house built for him. And it was partly because this gamekeeper, his wife looked after the corgis. But the key thing was, and I'm just thinking what you were saying about, you know, who could the Queen sort of go to? Who could she relax with? The keeper told me that when she was at Windsor, every few days she would ride down to their cottage that she'd had built for them, and she would insist on making them tea and staying for an hour or so and playing with the corgis. And so apparently she used to like throwing dog biscuits out through the back door so the corgis could run and get them. So, you know, she felt more relaxed in many ways with, you know, what, for want of a better word, we might call ordinary people, because they didn't have all the sort of issues that, you know, her children had because of their strange upbringing, her sister had because she couldn't find a role in the world. So, you know, I think the keeper that I interviewed and other servants of the time were very much like Bobo MacDonald, although, of course, she was quite extreme. But, you know, just one last thing about Bobo MacDonald and servants who get very close to the royals. This has its parallel. 300 years ago, Elizabeth I had a woman called Blanche Parry who looked after Elizabeth from the time she was born till the time Blanche Parry died. And it's the exact parallel. It was that complete, total devotion.
Yeah.
Which is extraordinary how history repeats itself like that.
It is, isn't it? With both Elizabeths. Yeah, very, very extraordinary. And how many servants would the royal family have? I mean, do they have so many per person or so many per palace, or how does it work?
One servant made a little joke to me and said, you know what the senior royals are like? If one has 100 servants, they all want 100 servants. I think the bill in 2024 for Charles's servants, and of course, he foots the bill for many of the servants who will work for the other senior royals, but his bill for servants in 2024 was a little under £27 million.
Oh, my
Lord. Yeah, I think that tells you. I mean, there are more than 500 servants just in Buckingham Palace. And, you know, in many ways, poor old Charles doesn't have any choice because, take, for example, Windsor. There are so many clocks at Windsor, and many of them are valuable. They're all mechanical, antique clocks. They all have to be cleaned, serviced, and they all have to be wound once a week. So they employ some, and that's all he does. He looks after the clocks at Windsor. So you can see, if you multiply jobs like that, you know, there's another chap who's employed, he's called a fender smith. Now, most people wouldn't know what a fender smith was. It's the man who, you know, in a big old-fashioned fireplace, you would get, it's a sort of low metal rail that runs across the front, sometimes has leather seats on it. Well, he's employed to look after those because there's so many of them.
Oh, my.
You know, they have lots of jobs like that. But it's not as my favourite story is Queen Victoria. She, somebody tried to reduce the expenditure because Victoria was so extravagant. And they said to her, look, could we stop paying the Grand Falconer? She had someone to look after her falcons. And she said, no, we can't do that. It's a question of the monarch's dignity. And then the person who was talking to her said, yes, Your Majesty, but you don't actually own any falcons.
Oh, she didn't even realise.
No, she did. She just thought it wasn't important that this person should have any work. The important point was that the post should exist, and that she should pay, you know. And it was one of those things where, as I was saying, the aristocratic advisors and stuff, didn't actually have any work. So it was one of her aristocratic friends who had this job, So he would lose the money, even though money was just being paid to him to be another kind of advisor, another kind of friend, because there were no Falklands. It's a bit like, you know, Queen Victoria's husband, Prince Albert, he was made by the Queen. He was made the ranger of Windsor Park. Well, he didn't do any ranging as a result. He was just paid for doing it. There was no work. So, you know, a lot of the senior jobs are rather like that. But there's so many interesting jobs that, you know, there's someone who looks after the king's racing pigeons, for example, because the royal family have all. So that's why there are so many jobs, and that's why the bill is so
enormous.
I can
imagine, yeah. Would there be somebody looking after the swans?
Yes, of course, because when they, you know, all the swans are owned by the royal family, yeah. By the monarch, and someone has to go out and do the swan upping. So, yes.
Crikey. What would happen, Tom, and we have seen it happen before, do all the servants have to sign like the Official Secrets Act or anything? Because we do know that servants, poor Burrell comes to mind, you know, go to the press or write a book. You know, how do they stop that?
Yeah, it's a big worry for the royal family, but I think it's really, in many ways, it's based on a misunderstanding, because they always feel that if a former servant writes a book, it will always be critical of the royal family. And actually, in many cases, it isn't. I found that over the years that I've talked to lots of servants, that many of them, more than half, I'd say, well over half, only really have positive things to say about the kindness, in many cases, of senior royals. Not all of them. I mean, there are some awful stories of senior royals being rather unpleasant to staff. But to answer your question more directly, when I first started to talk to royal servants at the end of the 1980s, that none of them signed what I believe are called non-disclosure agreements, where they basically signed something which says they will never talk about their experience of working as a royal servant. But they only came in the last sort of 20 years, 25 years. So many of my interviews are from before that time. And people who agreed to speak to me who had signed those, they were only happy to do it, you know, on the basis that I wouldn't name them.
Yeah.
And obviously I respected that. And, you know, the laws of libel protect the royals, really. So, you know, if there is criticism, it's often, you know, just someone's opinion. And I think many of the royals, probably most actually of the senior royals, they're not overly sensitive. They don't really want to shut down all comment and all the books written about them. Because as the late Queen said, you know, when she was talking about the royal family and the role of monarch, and she said, we have to be seen to be believed. And I think that links with the fact that, you know, people writing books about them, like me, or former members of staff writing books, in a way, we keep the interest going in the royal family. And, you know, as a member of staff said to me about the senior royals, well, you know, they don't like being criticised, but they'd hate it far more if they were just completely ignored and became irrelevant.
Yes, of course. And I think it makes them more approachable.
I think so too, yeah. You see their more human side. And, you know, even when, you know, for example, Prince Edward was once snapped at his chauffeur for looking in the rear mirror too often. But even that, which, okay, you know, it's not a flattering thing to say about a senior royal, but, you know, you can imagine Edward might have got a bit irritated if the...
We all have bad days, you know, don't we?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I remember getting a black cab in London, and the driver, he wouldn't stop talking to me, and I was exhausted. I felt a bit bad.
Yeah, they're only human at the end of the day.
They're only human, exactly. And I think in many ways, the more we realise that, the more sympathetic we are. And in many ways, the more we never dream that we might want to not have a royal family, because it adds to the sort of gaiety of the nation.
Of course,
it gives us something to chat about.
Of course it does. I'm extremely proud of what we have that other countries don't. I think it's great.
Yeah, me too. I agree. Yeah.
Well, there's obviously much, much more in the book. It's Tom's latest book. It's called Yes, Ma'am, The Secret Life of Royal Servants. It's out now, came out the end of January. And as I say, it's by Tom Quinn, who we're chatting to now. Now, I need to know, Tom, when I can interview you for a 10th time. So what's your next book?
I'm actually working on a book about, the provisional title is The Royal Family on Holiday, A History of Balmoral, because many of my interviews over the year have been with really interesting people who work at Balmoral, the Gillies, who take the Royal Family fishing and shooting. And because it's in such a remote place, and they have the Gillies balls every year where the Queen, now Charles and Camilla, dance with the Gillies and other staff. It's actually, so it's really interesting. So that's the one, I'm hoping it'll come out next year.
Excellent. I'll make a note. Thanks for your time again, Tom. You take care now.
Thank you very much. Thanks.
Bye-bye.